Not always politically correct, but always correct, using only primary source stories of those who were actually there. You're listening to Threads of Liberty.
Welcome back. There is some discussion in today's culture about George Washington because he was a slave owner. We can have another podcast in regards to the laws of the land at the time, the period of time that it was, and what was an accepted moray.
The question is, in what they call the cancel culture or cancel history, do we keep Washington around or do we cancel his story out?
Well, and keeping slaves is an important discussion. I don't want to just slide over that, but this isn't about that particular issue, this podcast today. This podcast is about all of our heroes have flaws. None of us are perfect. You can do a heroic act and be a jerk of a person in some respects.
You're not suggesting Washington was a jerk.
I'm not suggesting that George Washington was a jerk. We know if you study him that he was anything but a jerk. He was a man of honor and integrity. And thank goodness for him during the American Revolution and as our first president. Because, you know, one of the amazing things about Washington, which Europe could not believe, was that he let go of the presidency and didn't become a king, which is tradition that fortunately we are grounded upon.
One of the great European leaders said at the time that if Washington really did turn the power back to the American government after the war, that he was the greatest man that ever lived.
Yeah. If you just study Washington and a number of his qualities and traits, his actions, the life story, you're going to find a fascinating man. So, and like I said, not all perfect, but a fascinating man. And so today's podcast is about a small period of time during the American Revolution when they fought the Battle of Trenton and then the Battle of Princeton and the events that went on there and his bravery in regards to that.
So let's launch off into Princeton, but we have to begin with Trenton. Everybody knows about the Battle of Trenton.
I don't know if everybody knows about it or
okay.
not, but
almost everybody knows about the Battle of Trenton. It took place on Christmas Day. 1776, we've all heard the story. We've seen the picture of Washington standing in the front of the boat as they crossed the Delaware. Washington did not stand in the boat because he would have fallen out, but it's a great picture.
That is a great picture.
And his men crossed that river in frigid temperature. You heard the stories of how they wrapped their feet and you could track where they walked by the marks of the blood that they left in the snow. They got there, they defeated the Hessians, who were the Germans, who the British had left there to be in charge of Trenton. It was the first battle. It picked the Americans up because up to this point, this war was lost.
Yeah, so let's just stop there for just a second because we're about how far into the American Revolution?
Oh, we're 6 months into the American Revolution.
6 months. We hadn't won a battle yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. So,
this is
Trenton
it.
Is a big deal when we win.
The 10 days that include two battles of Trenton and the Battle of Princeton are considered to be the 10 most significant days of the war, really, because if we hadn't won those, the war would have ended right there. This happened a number of times throughout the war. So they win at the Battle of Trenton. The Americans are absolutely ecstatic. The British are stunned. Washington then makes a smart move. He pulls back from Trenton because he knows that the British General Cornwallis is going to come after him. They're mad that they lost, but they are offended that these farmers and merchants could actually beat them, as Cornwallis said, with their sticks and pitchforks.
Well, these upstart colonials, my goodness.
With their squirrel guns, their muskets, okay?
And no ammunition.
No ammunition. No clothes, really no uniforms, no tents, no ammunition.
Their own hunting guns, that's all they had.
So they pull back, though, from Trenton. They figure, okay, we've got to pull back because we know Cornwallis is coming back after us. They pull back across a small stream that's called the Assunpink Stream. It's about 10 or 12 feet wide. On their backside of them, though, is still the Delaware River. Now, you would think that Washington would cross that river to put the river between he and Cornwallis.
Right. You don't want to get caught between those two.
No. But they crossed the Assunpink, and they were going to, the intent was to cross the Delaware. But when they got there, this Delaware that had been freezing at the point when they crossed over, coming back, however, there were huge chunks of ice in this. There was no way they could cross this river. So they set up their battle front right there at the Assunpink. The British with Cornwallis came up, and for 3 or 4 days, there was a major conflict back and forth. At one point on the third day, for some reason, we don't know exactly why, but there was a small bridge that went across this stream. Washington decided to get up on his horse and go to the top of that little bridge and stop.
On his white horse.
On his white horse. So he got it. Went up the top of that bridge, stopped, and stared at the British.
Well, maybe it's because symbols are important and his men needed a symbol.
I don't know that dead symbols are necessary, but yes.
It's just a thought.
Yeah. But he did. He stared at them, then he turned around and went back. So yeah, I do agree with you. I think this was Washington telling his men, we can do this. Have courage. Have
and
strength.
And maybe a little in your face to the
a little
British.
Bit. Deservedly so. Because the British were a bit snooty about this. Well, on the fourth night, Washington realized they're coming after us tomorrow. We can't hold them off anymore. So in the middle of the night, he held a war council with all of his officers. And they had a major problem. They had captured all of this ammunition, the cannonball, the weaponry from Trenton, and they brought it back with them. They needed it desperately, and they were going to move on to Princeton, but they couldn't move any of this weaponry, especially the cannon, because there had been a warming trend, and there were 18 inches of mud. And I don't care how many oxen, how many horses you have, those cannon weighed thousands of pounds. You weren't going to move them.
No, they were too heavy.
So they're meeting and trying to decide what to do. Do we just leave this weaponry and take our men and run? We really can't afford
can't
to
get
do
it
that.
Back if you do
You're
that.
Not going to get it back. And at the moment that Washington asks his men, what do we do? Something that some people would say is chance. I choose not to call it chance. I'll call it providence. At that very moment, the wind changes from the south. And it comes in from the north, and it's not just a cool, cold wind, it's a frigid blast from the north. Within 1 hour, those 18 inches of mud had frozen solid. Washington then decides, okay, we can get out of here, we can bring our cannon with us, but let's send General Mercer with about 500 men ahead of us on towards Princeton.
Because they could move faster.
They could move faster, and they had to get to Princeton. Because Princeton held what they needed desperately still, more cannon, more gunpowder, more cannonballs, more weaponry. And they
so
had to capture that.
A warehouse or a
warehouse
cache or something there.
They had to capture.
Okay.
So off went General Mercer with about 500 men. They're marching in the middle of the night. They march all through the night, and they're marching all through the day. They get to about noon, and these men are exhausted. They're tired. They didn't realize, this is not funny, but it's kind of funny. They didn't realize that the British had men at Princeton. And their commander, Cornwallis, had said, we want you British in Princeton to go back down to Trenton. So what you had was Washington's men going from Trenton up to Princeton and the British men going from Princeton down to Trenton. They were passing each other. These men are tired. They're probably chatting along with each other. Somebody, somewhere, looked to their left or to their right because they were literally marching parallel going opposite directions.
With woods in the middle.
Woods, but only about 100 yards in between them.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the British or the Americans, but if the British looked to their left, what they saw, somebody had to have said, hey, look at that. Who are those guys? And the Americans had to say, Sam, who are those guys in the red coats over there?
That's right. Very easily seen in those red coats.
They looked
well.
At each other and said, what is going on?
Yeah.
Their officers realized immediately that this was going to be a major battle, and there was a hill right next to them. So the race then was to see who made it to the top of this hill first to have the high ground. Now, as usual, you look at the Olympics, the Americans always win in the sprints, and our guys beat the Brits to the top of the hill, partially also because the Brits were loaded down with everything that we didn't have.
Right.
They had their gunpowder, they had all their weaponry and stuff, and our guys were stripped down to pretty much just the clothes that they had on their back. We beat them to the top of the hill. Lined up against each other, 500 British with all of their weaponry and their wonderful red coats that just screamed in the middle of a green forest, shoot me, oh, shoot me.
Don't you wonder about the logic of that? Some commander had to say, these red coats are not a great idea in the American woods.
Well, they brought over that European, yeah. These are our colors. We're going to wear them everywhere.
Proudly.
Even if it has a sign on the back that says, I'm dumb, shoot me. But here they were, the Americans without their uniforms and their just regular clothes, because most of these were militia, 180 feet away from them, facing them directly, were 500 Brits with all their fine weaponry and uniforms. And the battle began. It carried on fairly even for about 30 minutes. Eventually, the British began to push the Americans back, push them back, push them back. General Mercer was in charge of this group of militia. And finally, the Americans broke and ran. Mercer tried to hold his men there. He couldn't do it. the Americans ran. Now, Washington is a short distance back. He's bringing up the rear with all of the cannon and the weaponry. Washington's coming up the rear, bringing up the rear, and he hears this noise ahead of him. And we all know, you can tell the difference between when there's been, for instance, a car wreck and there's been a party. You can hear the verbiage that's going on and the sounds that are going on. Washington could tell this was not good.
Right.
Full bore. He races his horse up to where his men are running away. As he's running forward, he's got dozens and dozens and dozens of men running past him. He's yelling at them to turn around, face the enemy. They won't do it. So Washington does what Washington does, whatever is necessary. Some people will think this is harsh. It's not. He did what he had to do. He pulled out his horsewhip, and he horsewhipped some of the men to get them to turn around. Now, he didn't have to horsewhip many, because Washington, at the time, was a big man, 6'2", 200 pounds. And if you're next to a guy that's getting horsewhipped, you're probably going to turn around, too.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but there was a great deal of respect for Washington.
Massive. There was a combination of respect and fear for the man, which is what's needed many times to be a great leader. Washington then organizes his men and starts pushing them forward. As he's moving forward now with this organized line, moving towards the British, he comes across General Mercer, who you mentioned earlier. General Mercer was a great general, but he was also one of Washington's closest friends. And lest there be any confusion about what would have happened to Washington if the British had gotten a hold of him, you can tell by what they did to Mercer. The Brits thought that Mercer was Washington. They'd not seen him up close, but because he was leading this and he was at the head, they thought it was Washington. They bayoneted Mercer 13 times. They asked, they demanded his surrender. He would not give it. So 13 times they bayoneted him. A little further on, as Washington moved his troops forward more, he found another one of his commanders that was bayoneted 7 times. This is what the Brits would have done. Washington moves them forward. The British move back. Because all of a sudden, there's something different now.
Mm-hmm.
There's this big guy on a white horse, white hair, in a blue uniform with his gold saber on the side that commands a different type of respect. All of a sudden, they realize this is Washington. So the Brits move back. Finally, they stop. The Americans line up in front of them. They are exactly 180 feet apart from each other.
Oh, so close.
500 facing each other. During this period of time, the Brits in the American Revolution always fought their battles. The generals stayed in the rear.
Mm-hmm.
They felt like they could see the battle better and direct it. Also, it was very convenient. You didn't normally get shot as much if you got 500 or 1,000 guys between you and the enemy.
And you do want to keep those who are creating the battle plan safe, you know?
Sure, you could use that excuse if you're the Brits. But yeah, we'll take that and go with it, okay? But yeah, it helped him direct things. Washington didn't fight that way. His officers fought from the front. So what Washington did is he was equal with his troops and they thought he would stay there with them. He didn't. Washington then, when his troops were totally lined up and organized, Washington charged directly into the open space between the American forces and the British forces. And placed himself exactly between them. Now remember, they were only 180 feet away from each other. He placed himself 90 feet away from the British and 90 feet away from the Americans.
Which is like, what, half of a football field?
90 feet. You're talking 30 yards, not even half a football field. Yep, 30 yards away. He's facing the British. Now the British at this time have to be thinking that God loves them. Because here sits the commander of the revolutionaries horses. On his horse.
A white horse. He's not a small man.
No, 6'2", like I said, 200 pounds. He's right there. All 500 muskets raised to fire at him. All 500 of the American muskets raised also to fire at the British. The problem is, who's between the Americans and the British?
He is. And friendly fire is every much a thing as being shot at.
It is. But there has to be a moment that Washington thought to himself, what was I thinking?
Yes.
We've all heard that country song, and I can't tell you the whole words. All I know is the gist of it is this. A young man picks up a young lady and they're going on a date. And the father says, you have her back at midnight or else. Well, the young man gets carried away and he doesn't get her back until 2:00 in the morning. Dad is waiting there at the house with a shotgun. Young man drops off the young girl. whips around his pickup and takes off as dad is firing a shotgun at him. And the young man is thinking to himself, what was I thinking?
Yes.
There has to be a moment when Washington's adrenaline or something died down and he thought, what was I thinking?
Well, because he knows if he is killed, the cause of freedom dies. There's no one to pick up the reins from that.
And you're exactly right. There's no question there. The British know this also. If we get Washington, we are famous, we are rich, we can go back to England and be heroes. Or we can stay here in America and be rewarded with lands and money. The Americans are thinking, if they have to be thinking, what was he thinking too? Because the Americans are thinking, if Washington dies, we lose this right now. We become slaves to the British. We lose our lands. We will probably spend the rest of our lives in prison ships.
Right.
Or executed, beheaded or hung. They wouldn't shoot you because as traitors, they didn't shoot you. They hung you or beheaded you. Washington's aide-de-camp was with him. Now that's his assistant. And we have a primary source that tells us exactly what happened at the moment that the gunfire went off.
The enemy then halted and dressed their line also, and the order to fire passed simultaneously along the ranks of both. Washington still sat midway between the two, his eyes turned on the foe. One of his aides, horror-struck at the sight, dropped the reins upon his horse's neck and covered his face with his cap, so as not to see his commander fall. A crash of musketry followed, and when the smoke lifted, there sat Washington, to the amazement of all, unharmed. The next moment, his loud shout roused over the din of battle, and swinging his hat overhead for a banner to those who pressed after, he spurred against the flying enemy. His favorite aide wept like a child at the spectacle, while Fitzgerald, another aide, and the finest horseman in the army, dashed up to him and in the suddenness of his joy exclaimed, "Thank God your excellency is safe."
Try to imagine the picture. 500 muskets on one side, 500 on another. You know, you've seen from movies, Patriot or whatever, what it looks like when a musket fired. Smoke goes off. You have 1,000 muskets firing all at once. Horrific sound. Everybody is waiting then.
And horrific smoke.
You can't see. Probably literally 10 feet in front of you, let alone 90 feet in front. So they wait. And it had to be one of those moments in time when everybody froze. As the mist from the musket smoke begins to clear, they can't see. They're peering to see what's happened to Washington. Not to see whether he's dead or not, because he's dead. But to see what it looks like. As the musket smoke begins to drop down, what they see is Washington, still mounted on his horse, still facing the British, but with his saber pulled and pointed at them. And this is where you have to step back a little bit in time. There was a point where General Cornwallis could have captured Washington one evening, but he decided to wait with another battle. And one of Cornwallis's officers said, "If we wait till tomorrow, the fox will escape." Because that's how they referred to Washington, that he was the fox, because he was always getting away from him. Keeping that in mind, smoke clears, Washington is still facing the Brits, on his white horse, his saber pulled, and with his little sense of humor, he did have a sense of humor after all, he calls out to his troops, "It's a fine day for a fox hunt," and off they go after the Brits. They defeat the British there, chase them down, it's a brutal battle, but they win. They then march on to Princeton, take the cache of stores there, the cannon, the weaponry, everything there, and on they go. These are three of the most important battles, even though there were numerous important battles, three of the most important battles that took place in the American Revolution, because if they had not won, if Washington had died, the American Revolution would have ended right there on January 4th, 1777. And we would all be speaking with British accents and singing "God Save the Queen."
Would be.
Wonderful lady that she is, but I'll take what we have. There is a movement, as you know, to cancel out great American leaders. Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, even Abraham Lincoln. I do not know how you cancel and leave George Washington, the father of America, the greatest general and one of the most noble men we've ever had, how you cancel him out of American history and still have American history. It was thanks to George Washington.
Well, we certainly have to admire his bravery. Underneath every act of bravery, there's always that pit in your stomach of fear, And yet he moved past that and led his troops in a way that caused us to win.
I don't know how you can identify Washington in one word. It was everything. It was his character. It was his heart. It was his soul, his bravery, his faith in God. Everything that made up Washington, that made him so unique, that lifted him. And this is not what people say today. It's not the correct thing to say politically, but it lifted him above other men.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important to take the totality of a person, not just cherry pick this thing or that thing. It's important to take the person as a whole and take a look at what made them tick. And we all have strengths and we all have faults. Thanks for joining us today.
We hope you'll join us again for our next story of Threads of Liberty.